welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour, crime stories. Later on, we hear an adaptation of the motion picture The Big Clock on the Screen Directors Playhouse. Right now, it's a classic episode of Dragnet from June 22, 1954 on NBC. This Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcasts the 253rd program in the series, starring Jack Webb and Ben Alexander, the story The Big Customer.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A special officer has been shot during a routine patrol. His assailants have escaped into the city. There's no lead to their whereabouts. Your job, find them.
It was Saturday, May 21st. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Spidey. We were on our way back from the scene, and it was 10:56 p.m. when we got to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. Treatment room.
That you, Doctor?
No, ma'am. Police officers. Doctor said we could ask you some questions.
About the robbery?
Yes, ma'am. It's my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
Hello, Ms. Montgomery.
You heard anything about Keith? Is he all right?
Well, the doctor's still with him.
Is he going to be all right?
We better talk to the doctor about that, I think.
He tried to stop the man from robbing us. Tried to throw him out of the store.
Yes, ma'am. Now, can you tell us what happened?
Well, I guess so, if the doctor said I could.
Well, anytime you don't feel like going on, just tell us, please.
All right.
What time did the man come into the store?
About 9:30, right around in there.
Yeah.
Keith and me were sitting in the back room playing cribbage. We usually play a couple of games before we close up, especially when business is kind of slow.
Uh-huh.
These two men came in. Keith went out to wait on them.
Did you go with him?
No, wasn't any reason to. Just two customers, no reason for me to go out. Looked like they came in together.
You could see them from where you were, huh?
Oh, yes. We had the card table set up right in the doorway of the back room.
All right, ma'am, so I could go on?
Well, Keith went out and asked them what they wanted.
Yeah.
One of them said he wanted a bottle of vodka. Keith asked him what kind, and the man said it didn't make any difference, said he wanted 100 proof, though.
Uh-huh.
Keith got the bottle off the shelf and came back. Told the man how much the bottle was, and that's when the other man pulled out the knife.
You say the second man drew the knife, huh?
That's right. Short fella. Had this kind of knife with a spring blade where you push a button and the blade snaps out, you know how?
Yes, ma'am.
Did the men know you were in the back room?
They must have. All he had to do was look through the door and they'd have seen me. I wasn't trying to hide.
All right. Feel like going on?
Yes. The doctor gave me some kind of pill. It makes me a little numb, but I feel all right.
All right. Can you please go ahead? Now, what happened after they pulled this knife?
Well, the short one told Keith to give him the money. Said it was a holdup.
Could you remember his exact words?
Oh, I don't know. Seems he said, "All right, old man, this is a stick-up. Put all the money in the register in a paper bag and don't cause any trouble." That's as near as I can remember. That's what he said.
All right, what happened then?
Well, Keith told him to get out of the store. Said the two of them were too young to get mixed up in that kind of foolishness. Told him to get right out.
Yeah.
Little fella, the short one with the knife, grabbed Keith and told him they weren't playing games, but if he knew what was good for him, he'd do like he was told. Had the knife right at his chest. Thought he was going to cut Keith.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I came out of the back room, when I thought they were going to hurt Keith.
All right. Can you go on, please?
Yes. I want to get this over and tell you what you need to know so you can catch the fellas.
All right, ma'am. What happened when you came into the store?
Well, I tried to get the men out of the place, told them that if they knew what was good for them, they'd leave right then.
Uh-huh.
Might as well have been talking to a wall. They didn't pay any attention to me.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I tried to get to the phone. I wanted to call the police.
What was your husband doing at this time?
Standing there trying to keep from moving into the knife. This short little fella had it pressed right against his chest. Had the point right here. Keith made any kind of a move, he'd have been stabbed.
I see.
When they saw me go to the phone, the tall one grabbed me and hit me with his fist closed. Hit me about as hard as he could. As soon as he did that, Keith seemed to go crazy. Wrenched himself away from the one with the knife and jumped on the tall man, fought him as hard as he could.
Yeah.
Terrible the way it happened.
Yes, ma'am.
The tall man hit Keith along the neck with the edge of his hand and knocked my husband down. Then the little fella jumped on him, held his knife right at his throat and told him to take the money and put it in a bag, that he didn't want any more trouble or he'd kill us both. All the time he had the knife right here at Keith's throat.
Yes, ma'am. Your husband did what they said?
That's right. He opened the register and gave him the money, put it in a paper bag. I thought they'd leave after that, but they didn't. Only made him madder.
Why was that, you know?
It wasn't enough money, only about $30 or $35. They said we had more in the back room, and they wanted that, too. Said for us to get it or they'd kill us.
Well, did you get it for them?
Yes. I went back and took it out from where we hid it, handed it right over.
Mm-hmm.
What'd the doctor say about Keith? He must have said something.
Frank, would you check with Dr. Sebastian and see what's going on in there?
Yeah, I will.
Would you go on, please?
After they got the other money, the two men left the store. Put the cash in the paper bag and walked out. Said for me to stay still for 5 minutes or they'd come back and kill Keith and me.
Mm-hmm. When did the special officer come into the store?
We didn't.
Ma'am?
He drove up when we were arguing with the men on the sidewalk, and after they left the store, Keith got up and ran after them, tried to hold him.
Well, did the officer know what was going on?
No, not at first. He thought it was just an argument. When he walked up, Keith tried to tell him that the store was being robbed, but the tall robber said it was just a personal fight. Said it didn't concern anybody else but Keith and him.
Were you on the sidewalk at the time?
Yes, right beside Keith.
I see.
Robber said that Keith was just an old crackpot trying to cause trouble, that the officer should forget about it.
Yeah.
I guess it didn't sound very good to him because he said it'd be better if Keith and the men talked to a policeman. That's when the tall hold-up man grabbed the gun and shot.
At the officer?
Yes. Grabbed the gun out of his holster and shot him in the stomach.
What happened then?
The smaller of the two stabbed Keith a couple of times, and both of them ran down the street.
Did you see where they went?
Yes. They got into a car that was parked about a half a block away. Jumped into the car and left.
All right, Ms. Montgomery, just a couple more questions now. Did either of the two men use a name at any time?
What do you mean?
Well, when they were talking to each other, did they use a name of any kind? Do you remember?
Yes. When they shot the officer, the big one, he did the shooting. He said, "Come on, Hank. Let's get out of here." Like that, he said it.
I see. Now, was there anything outstanding about the two men that you can remember? Anything that would make them easier for us to identify?
Oh, I can't think of anything right off. Just that one was tall and the other one was short. That's all I can think of.
About how tall, do you remember?
The big one?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, over 6 feet. I'd say he was about 6 feet three, maybe even more.
Mm-hmm. Did he have any special marks or scars that you can recall?
No, nothing like that.
Now, how about the short one? Anything to make it easier for us to identify him?
Just his fingernails.
How do you mean?
They looked like he'd never cleaned them. Real long and dirty, I remember that.
Was there anything else?
No.
Did either of them speak with any kind of an accent, would you remember?
No, sounded just like anybody else. Nothing special about him.
I see.
Joe?
Yeah, Frank?
See you a minute.
Yeah.
Did you find out about Keith? Did you talk to the doctor?
He'll be right in to see you, Miss Montgomery.
Is Keith going to be all right? Why don't you tell me what's happened?
Try to take it easy, ma'am. The doctor will be right in.
All right, but tell him to hurry, please, please.
Yes, we'll do that. Did you call County?
Yeah, they're operating on Holman.
How's he doing?
Well, as soon as they got the bullet out, he should make it. Wound's not serious.
What about Keith Montgomery?
He just died. Knife wounds.
The story we'd gotten from Irene Montgomery was pretty much the same as Special Officer Kenneth Holman had given us. Immediately after the robbery, a local and an APB had gone out on the suspects. In canvassing the neighborhood, the investigating officers had found two eyewitnesses to the shooting stabbing. A man and a woman had been parked in an automobile directly across the street from the Montgomery store. They had been able to give us a description of the car that the suspects had driven away from the scene, along with the last three numbers on the license plate. While Frank and I had been talking to Mrs. Montgomery, officers Benson and Herman from robbery detail had been going through the Department of Motor Vehicle records looking for the owner's name. Information on the method of operation used in the crime was sent to the stats office and a run was started. The moniker file at R&I was checked for a suspect with the nickname Hank, who matched the description of the smaller thief. The two eyewitnesses were brought into the city hall to go through the mug books for a possible identification. While Frank went to the office to check with Benson and Herman, I worked with the witnesses.
No. Uh-uh. Not on this page.
How about here?
No, I don't see him here either.
All right.
Oh, wait a minute. This fellow here, see?
This one?
Yeah, it's not the hold-up man, but he's got the same kind of ears. Close to his head like... Yeah, same kind of ears.
You're sure it's not the man, though?
Uh-uh. Just got ears like him.
All right, Mr. Steele, would you go on, please, here?
Mm-hmm. I remember those ears. I used to go to school with a kid that had ears like that. Junior high school.
Yes, sir.
He's a mean kid. I'll never forget him. He's real mean. Don't guess I thought of him for at least 15 years. Never forget him, though. Mean?
Yes, sir.
You waited for me after school once. I had a big fight. I don't even know what it was about. Big fight. It really beat me up.
Yes, sir.
Sure like to meet him now. It'd be a different story.
Yes, sir. Now, how about right here? Do you see either of the suspects on these pages?
No. No picture in this book. You got another one?
Yeah, I got it.
Say, how many more got of these things, anyhow?
Quite a few. You can see them right here on the shelves.
You want me to go through all of them?
Well, we'd like to have you check the pictures, yes, sir.
That's going to take a while.
You and your wife are the only two people who can give us an identification.
Well, how about the woman who was held up? What's her name, Mrs. Holman?
No, Montgomery. Holman was the officer who was shot.
Yeah, yeah. What about Mrs. Montgomery? Can't she tell you about the robbers?
She's under the care of her doctor. Her husband died, you know.
What, from being stabbed?
Yes, sir, that's right.
That's too bad. We didn't know what it was all about, you know.
Yes, sir.
Me and Harry are just sitting there. All of a sudden, there's this fight and a shot. We didn't know what the freaks was.
Yes, sir. I wonder if we can go on with the books here.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how about right here?
No. No, not here.
All right.
Mm-mm. Say, he's mean. What'd he do?
Robbery.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell. Look at the face. You can always tell.
Yes, sir.
No, I don't see him here. Perry.
Sir?
Perry Nicholson. That's the guy's name. One with the close ears, I remember it now. Haven't thought of him. 15 years. Perry Nicholson. Bully.
Yes, sir.
Sure like to meet old Perry now. It'd be a different story if he wanted to fight now. Oh, different story.
Yes, sir.
Joe.
Yeah?
A hold-up car.
Yeah.
I just found it abandoned.
Two officers in a radio unit had found the car in a parking lot at the corner of Rosemont Avenue and Waterloo. When the vehicle was discovered and the similarity to the description that had been broadcast was noticed, the car was put under surveillance and our office had been notified. Frank and I left the city hall and drove out to the parking lot immediately. The car was placed under surveillance again and we checked it through DMV. We found the car was owned by an Edwin Vargas, 1879 Moss Street out in Burbank. We checked the name through R&I, but we found that he had no criminal record in our file. We drove out to see Vargas. While Frank covered the rear of the place, I rang the bell of the house and waited.
Yeah?
Like to see Mr. Vargas?
Well, he's not in right now. Anything I can do?
You know where he is?
No, I imagine he got held up downtown, probably working late.
Wonder if it'd be all right if I wait for him.
I'm not sure. You mind telling me who you are?
Sorry. Police officer. My name's Friday.
What'd the cops want Ed for?
Might be better if we talk to him.
You alone?
Anybody else in the house, ma'am?
No.
Your husband owned a 1953 dark blue Ford sedan?
Yes.
He's driving it tonight, is he?
Well, sure. He took it to work with him this morning.
All right. Might be better if I waited inside, huh?
All right. Come on in. I don't know what this is all about, but you can bet it's some kind of mistake. Ed's never had no trouble with the cops. Never. None.
Where's that door lead over here?
Bedroom.
All right, if I take a look?
Well, go ahead. You ain't going to find anything.
What's that over there, the bathroom?
Yeah.
All right, just the one bedroom?
No need for any more. Me and Ed don't have any children.
Kitchen this way?
Yeah. Say, if you're looking for something, maybe if you'll tell me what it is, I can help you.
You just want to check the house, ma'am. This all the rest of the house?
I told you we don't need any more room.
I see. Just unlocking your back door, ma'am. My partner's out there. All right, Frank.
See you here?
No. No.
Who is
not.
This? Another cop?
This is my partner, Frank Smith, Miss Vargas.
Hello.
Seems to me you should be able to tell me what this is all about, Mr. Friday.
Can you give us a description of your husband?
Why?
It might help us to get him out of trouble, maybe.
He's in no trouble. You got something on your back and you're trying to dump it on Ed and it isn't going to work.
You want to give us a description?
What do you want to know?
How tall is your husband?
6'3".
How old?
32.
What color is his hair?
Kind of sandy. Look, what is this, a third degree? What are you trying to prove with all these questions?
We just want to get at the truth, ma'am.
It's a kind of hard way to do it, if you ask me.
Well, I'm sorry for causing you any trouble.
You are.
Where does your husband work?
He's a salesman.
Who for, ma'am?
Insurance company downtown.
Usually work this late?
No, I told you that.
But you think he's at work tonight?
Yes.
Well, then you wouldn't mind if we called him, would you?
I'm not going to have you causing him any embarrassment.
Well, don't worry about it, Ms. Vargas. Would you like to give us the number?
It's in the phone book. Look under emergency numbers.
You want to make a call, Frank?
Yeah, I'll do.
Look, what do you think he's done?
Police business, ma'am.
I'm his wife. I got a right to know.
It'll be better if we talk to him, I think.
That's what you say.
Your husband ever been in trouble with the police before?
Not that I know of.
How long you lived here?
You mean in California?
That's right.
I was born here.
How about your husband?
He's been here a couple of years.
Where's he from?
New York State.
Where in New York State?
A little place right outside of Utica.
You ever been in trouble back there, would you know?
Well, if he was, he didn't say anything to me about it.
How long has he had the job?
Since a week after he came out. Ed's a smart guy. He'd have no trouble getting work.
How about it?
I talked to the building superintendent.
Yeah.
He says Vargas left at 5:30 this afternoon.
The description of the owner of the car used in the holdup, coupled with his absence, made him a prime suspect in the robbery. We continued to talk to his wife. She gave us some of the background on Vargas. She told us that they'd only been married a little over a year and that they were still trying to pay off the debts that her husband had incurred before their marriage. She went on to say that in the last few days, he'd been depressed about their finances and that on that morning, Vargas had said he'd figured a way out for them. Frank called the office and the broadcast was gotten out asking that the man be picked up and detained for questioning. 1:15 a.m., we asked Mrs. Vargas about her husband's friends.
Isn't anyone Ed's real close to?
Well, is there one man he's with more than the others, would you know? Maybe somebody he works with.
No, unless maybe it's Vic. Ed don't have much to do with him, though. He knows I don't care for him. Don't like to have him around.
Who's that, man?
Vic Noble. He works in the same office as Ed.
And what's he look like?
Oh, not much. Little guy, kind of nondescript. Never did figure out he could be a good salesman. I'd never buy anything from him. Honestly, it makes me nervous just to have him around.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, go right ahead. If it's your husband, it might be better if you didn't tell him we were here.
All right. Hello? Yeah, honey, where you been? What? Well, do you know when? Uh-huh. Well, did you call the police? Well, you should have called them right away. Yeah. No, I'll drive right down and pick you up. You wait right there. Uh-huh. Well, right away. That's right. Well, look, tell me where it is. Oh, yeah, I know. Turn left, yeah. All right, I'll find it. You wait right there, will you? All right, goodbye. Bye. That was Ed.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find yourself another boy.
Ma'am.
Well, whatever this is, it has something to do with Ed's car, doesn't it?
That's right.
And then you're all wrong about Ed. He couldn't have had anything to do with
what
it.
What do you mean?
Ed's car was stolen tonight.
We got the address of the bar where Ed Vargas had called from. Frank and I drove down and talked to him. He told us that he'd left work and stopped in the bar for a couple of drinks before he went home. However, when he left the place, he found that his car was gone. He returned to the bar and spent the next several hours trying to figure out what to do. We talked to the bartender, and he verified Vargas' statement that he'd been in the place all evening. He was released from custody and allowed to return home. Frank and I continued to talk to the bartender.
Got to get ready to close up pretty quick.
Just a couple more questions.
Will you mind if I clean up the back bar while we talk?
No, sir. Go right ahead.
Thanks. Well, what do you want to know?
You told us that Vargas came in about 6:15, is that right?
Near as I can remember, yeah. Give or take a couple of minutes on either side.
But he was here before 7.
For sure.
You meet anybody here?
How far is this going to go?
What do you mean?
Is his wife going to find out if I tell you?
Not from us.
Well, Ed and the missus haven't been getting along so good lately. You know, been beefing a lot.
Yeah.
Ed's a funny guy. He don't like no trouble at home. As soon as Sarah started giving him problems, he found another girl, a kid that works in his office. They usually drop in here for a couple of drinks before he goes home.
Yeah.
Nothing serious going on with them. Just they like to sit and talk. Ed's all the time telling her how this wife doesn't understand him. Old line, but I think he means it.
He was in here with a girl tonight, was he?
Yeah, just like all week. Every night, they come in about 4:45, sit in the back booth, have a couple of martinis, and then they leave. I think maybe Ed drops her off on the way home. She don't have a car.
Yeah.
Tonight, they had more than just a couple of drinks. I think maybe there was something wrong, you know, a little problem.
What about?
Look, people come in here to relax. They all got something on their minds. I make it a practice not to eavesdrop or interfere.
What was their problem, do you know?
Sarah won't hear it?
No, we told you before.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't want her to come around here causing no beef. She's jealous, you know, real jealous.
That's so?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Ed must have told the girl that he was thinking of leaving his wife because tonight she told him to do something about her or she was walking out. Had a little kind of tiff, and then she left. After that, he went out to get the car and found it been stolen.
Where'd he leave it, do you know?
A lot behind the building.
Did he leave the keys in the car?
I don't know. You saw him when he left carrying a big load. He don't remember. Probably did, though.
You have anybody else in here tonight that looked like Vargas?
What do you mean?
Well, as tall as he was, maybe.
A lot of tall people come in here.
Yes, we understand. Were there any tonight?
A couple, yeah.
Any of them come in with a short fella, about 5, 6, or 7?
Yeah.
What time did they come in?
Oh, about a little after 7.
When did they leave?
Well, I don't know, maybe 7:30, 7:45. I'm not sure. There's one of the tables back there. I served them a couple of times. Didn't take much notice when they left. They paid for the drinks when I brought them, left a $50 tip, took off.
They come in here regular, do they?
Yeah, a couple times a week, maybe more.
They usually together?
Well, I've never seen him any other way except once. I'd rather not remember that time.
What do you mean?
Came in here early, spent the whole night here boozing, got pretty plastered. I had to take Nick home. He couldn't make it alone.
Which one is Nick?
The short one, little guy.
What's he do for a living?
Nothing I ever heard of.
Well, how's he live?
Any way he can. Always seems to have dough. I think maybe some kind of gambler, something like that. Always loaded. The way he looks, though, you'd think he was some kind of mechanic, but he's not.
Is that right?
Sure, he dresses nice, always got a good suit on, but he doesn't know how to carry it off.
What do you mean?
His fingernails. I don't think he ever cleans them.
We got complete descriptions of the two men. They matched those of the thieves perfectly. The bartender closed the place and took us down the street to a hotel where he said he'd taken Nick Roxford. We talked to the desk clerk, but we found that Roxford had moved several months before. By checking with some of the people in the hotel, we got a forwarding address for him. It was a cheap rooming house down on South Pico. Frank and I went by the city hall and ran the name through R&I. We found that Roxford had an arrest record for petty theft and ADW. He'd served a term in the county jail and was at present under the jurisdiction of the court. His mugshot was pulled and taken out to the witnesses for identification. We checked with the manager of the boarding house, and we found that Roxford and a Henry Larson were registered in one of the rooms. In the company of the manager, we went up to the room, but the pair wasn't in. We contacted the office and told them where we were. They told us that Roxford had been positively identified as one of the holdup men. We settled down to wait for the suspects to come back. 3:30 a.m. 4. 5. 5:15 a.m.
Sounds like somebody's coming.
Well, there wasn't no other way. You was there, didn't see you doing nothing to stop it. You shot the cop.
I still think so.
All right, hold it right there.
What are you doing here?
Police officers, you're under arrest.
Watch it, Frank!
All right, look out, Frank! Get up.
They made it kind of rough, didn't it?
Yeah, they did.
All right, come on.
Get up. Come on. Get on your feet.
Now let's take them downtown.
Yeah. I better check the cuffs. Don't want them too tight.
No, you might hurt them, huh? Two suspects were taken downtown to the interrogation room. Henry Larson was handcuffed to the chair in robbery while Frank and I talked to Nick Roxford.
It's a bad beef. I know it. You guys are going to find out.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Ain't going to tie no robbery rap to me.
Look, we've already done it. The witnesses gave us a positive identification on you.
How could they? They never seen me.
We got a picture of you. It's pretty good.
You want to tell us about it?
I got nothing to say. I want a lawyer. I ain't going to talk till I see a lawyer.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you know the old man died?
I don't know nothing about no old man.
His wife says you're the one who stabbed him.
She's crazy.
She's willing to take it to court.
It'll never stick.
We think it will.
We think we can make you for first degree.
What about Hank?
Who, Larson?
Yeah, what happens to him?
Same charge.
He know it yet?
No, you're the first one to hear.
What if I give you a hand?
How do you mean that?
Well, suppose I tell you it was Hank's idea, the whole thing. Go any better with me?
You know we don't decide that.
Well, it seems like if I helped you, be better with me.
All right, you want to tell us about it?
I'll make you a deal.
No deals.
Look, just promise me you won't tell Hank if I give you the real story, huh?
All right, go ahead.
Well, the whole thing was his idea right from the start. He cased the store. The whole thing was his idea.
What about the car?
Well, that was Hank's, too. He spotted it, said it'd make a good deal. You check the car, you'll find his prints all over it.
All right, what happened after that at the store?
Well, it was Hank again. I didn't want no part of it. Hank made me. Said if I backed out, he'd get me. He's a big man. He gets mean when he's crossed. I wasn't about to give him no trouble.
Go ahead.
Well, we got to the place, and he made me go in. He made me take a piece of the action.
Now, wait a minute. Let's back up here and get this straight. You trying to tell me all the time you wanted no part of it?
No. No, you got to believe it.
Well, the way we got it, you were having a time with a knife.
Well, I got scared. That's all. I got scared. I didn't know what I was doing.
Sure you did.
Look, you got to believe me. I'm telling the truth. It was all Hank's idea, the whole thing. I want no part of it. Never did.
All right, just keep your voice down, will you?
I told you. Now, you know about the whole thing. You won't tell Hank, will you?
What difference does it make?
He finds out I told you, he'll kill me.
Remember I asked you before?
Huh?
What difference does it make?
Henry Taylor Larson and Nicholas John Roxford were tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. On recommendation of the jury, they received maximum sentence and were executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet on Tuned to Yesterday, a program from NBC and later heard on Armed Forces Radio from June 22, 1954. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and now the Screen Directors Playhouse presents an adaptation of the 1948 motion picture The Big Clock, with its director as special guest, John Farrow. The movie originally starred Ray Milland, Charles Laughton, and Maureen O'Sullivan, wife of director Farrow, and she'll be reprising her role along with star Ray Milland as George Stroud, from July 8, 1949 on NBC.
From Hollywood, Pabst Blue Ribbon, finest beer served anywhere, proudly presents... Screen Directors Playhouse, production The Big Clock, director John Farrell, stars Ray Milland, Maureen O'Sullivan. The Hollywood Screen Directors present an adventure in time, The Big Clock, starring Ray Milland and Maureen O'Sullivan. And introduced by the director of the film, Mr. John Farrell. When a taste for high adventure is combined with a brilliant intellect, the result is likely to be the stuff that screen directors are made of. In the person of our guest director tonight, we find a sailor, a soldier of fortune, a world-renowned biographer, and the creator of such thrilling films as 2 Years Before the Mast, California, Alias Nick Beale, and tonight's story, The Big Clock. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Farrell.
Thank you. One of the most engaging forms of fiction is that nail-biting exercise known as the thriller. And, of course, the very heart of every thriller is the chase. I wanted to make The Big Clock because it revolves around the most bizarre chase I've ever encountered. Now, I think you should discover it for yourselves. The Big Clock, starring Ray Milland and Maureen O'Sullivan in the roles they originated, George and Georgette Stroud. But first of all, listen to the other star, the clock itself, The Big Clock.
Endless, remorseless, without boundaries. It never stops, it never dies. Perhaps that's why Earl Janeth permitted his mania for clocks. Only time was greater than Janeth, the feudal baron of Janus Publications, the dictator of a magazine empire, powerful, brilliant, ruthless, and in love with time. That was Earl Janus. And I was his servant, George Stroud, editor of Crimeways magazine. There were many magazines and many servants in the Janus building, and while they seldom saw Janus, they always saw his clock in the lobby. The big clock.
My monument to time, George. Time, more precious than gems, more intractable than mountains. Remember that when you see the big clock. The clock tower works the machinery of time, and time is working for me. Time is working for Janus. Now see Steve Hagen. He wants to talk to you.
Steve Hagen. Steve was Janus' teeth and claws, his prime minister, his trigger man. From some journalistic gutter, Janus had raised him to chief editor.
You've displayed quite an unusual talent, George. I mean, your tactics in tracking down three killers in the last month.
Thanks. We just think our system's a good one.
Hasn't failed yet, George. Well, I just want you to know that Janus Publications values our relationship. I hope the feeling is mutual.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just crazy about the company.
Now, one more thing, George. You're leaving on your vacation tonight. Any special plans?
Yep. My wife and I are going down to West Virginia on a delayed vacation. It's only taken 7 years.
I see. That'll be all, George. For now.
Mr. Stroud's office. Yes, just a moment. It's your wife.
Oh, thanks, Miss Adams. Hello, Georgette.
Hello, darling. I have the tickets. The train leaves at 7:20.
Right. Meet you at the station.
George, you're sure you won't let anything happen?
Now, what could happen?
Oh, I'm afraid of Janus. We've made plans so many times before, and every time he's made you stay. Please, not this time.
Not a chance. Who's more important, my wife or my boss?
Who is, George?
You dopey. Now say goodbye. I'll meet you at 7:20.
Goodbye, darling.
Bye.
George.
Yes, Steve.
Sorry, George. I just talked to Mr. Janus. He wants you to stick with the magazine for the next month.
The next month? What about my vacation?
Postpone it.
Not a chance.
Don't you like your job, George?
Well, if you want to know, I don't. I'm fed up.
But you won't quit. You're part of Janus now. You like his money. You like the prestige. You'll stay.
Not this time, Steve. This time, Janus wrong. Dead wrong.
I am never wrong, George.
Mr. Janus.
George, I have two matters to take up with you. One, a Crimeways cover proof indicates that you ordered a green banner instead of a red one that I requested.
The printer said red didn't fit the color pattern.
Steve, would you please dismiss the chief printer on Crimeways?
All right.
Now, Mr. Stroud, point number two. Despite the fact that you are a most excellent crime editor and a most amazing finder of missing persons, you have exactly 3 minutes to decide. Either you will give up your vacation temporarily, or get out.
I don't need 3 minutes. I don't need 3 seconds. I quit, Janus. I quit. When I left the building, the big clock said 5:20. I had 2 hours before I met Georgette at the train. And I went over to the Van Barth bar for a celebration drink. For the first time in years, I felt free and clean and happy. I was through with Janus and Steve and the whole cruel concentration camp of Janus Publications, but time was having its joke. It began with a girl at the bar, and only time knew where it would end.
You're George Stroud, aren't you?
She was blonde, beautiful, and expensive looking.
I'm Pauline York. Buy me a drink.
Why?
On the strength of losing your job.
I didn't lose my job. I quit.
I was in Janus' office when it happened. Hagen's intercom was turned on.
Oh, so you know my deepest secrets.
We have something in common now.
Like what?
We both hate Earl Janus. Oh, he's been good enough. Money, an apartment. But I hate him.
Bartender.
Yes, sir.
A drink for the lady, just like mine.
Yes, sir.
Do you always drink green drinks?
Well, it reminds me of green ink, and today I love green ink.
Janus hates green.
He loves clocks, and he hates green. Wonder how he'd feel about a green clock.
George. George, you have reason to dislike Janus. Between us, we know a great deal about him. Enough to write his biography, George. You and I.
But who'd buy it?
Janus.
Uh-uh. Sorry, that's out of my line.
Pardon me. Here's your drink, miss.
Fine, just sit here. Oh, Oh, all over my dress.
Yeah, use my handkerchief.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry. Glass just slipped.
Oh, it'll be all right. George, I'm afraid your handkerchief is soaked. I'll put it in my bag.
Hey, you better take this. It fell out of your purse. You wouldn't want to lose a nice check like...
It is nice, isn't it?
Yeah. $2,000. Signed, Steve Hagen.
It's Janet's. Steve signs all his checks.
It's a lovely gift. You should buy him something in return.
What would you suggest?
Well, I suggest a green clock. You'd really appreciate a green clock, and I'm just the guy to get it for him. Come on.
Mister, this is only a second-hand store. We ain't got no green clocks.
Oh, it's a shame.
You have failed us both. Go hide in the corner.
Sorry, Mac.
George, there, that brass sundial. If we had a green ribbon...
A stroke of genius. My man, have you any green ribbon?
Yeah, I guess so.
Tie the ribbon on the brass sundial and presto.
A green clock.
So, we had fun and bought the green clock. And suddenly, it was 7:30. 7:30 and the train for West Virginia had left 10 minutes ago. Georgette, I'd forgotten. I phoned our apartment. The maid answered.
She called just before the train left, Mr. Stroud. Said to tell you she was leaving. On schedule, without you.
Oh, that's too bad, George. Well, now we might as well spend the evening together. How about my apartment? My maid's on vacation. We'll be alone.
I went with Pauline. I was hurt and disappointed and sore, and I wanted to talk. It was after midnight when the phone rang.
George, you'll have to leave.
Why?
That was Janet. He's coming right up. It's late anyway. 12:30. Oh, please, George, hurry.
Well, we wouldn't want to make Janet unhappy, would we?
Please, hurry. Here, take the sundial.
Keep it from me to you.
All right, but hurry. Wait until you hear the elevator, then use the stairs.
I waited on the stairs, watching the elevator door. Janet stood under the hall light looking around and then in my direction, screwing up his eyes to see into the darkness. He saw me, but it was too dark to recognize me.
Oh, she has another one. Another man for Pauline.
That's all I saw. I walked down the stairs and went home to bed. Hello.
Steve Hagen, George. We've got a great story for you.
I'm sorry, Steve, but I quit. I'm through.
Hold on. Mr. Janet wants to speak to you.
Hello, George. George, I want you to find someone for me. The trail is still fresh.
But I quit, remember?
Forget that, forget that. This man was in the city last night with a blonde. We know two places they visited, the Van Barth Bar and an unidentified second-hand shop. We have reason to believe the man's name is Mr. Green. And, oh yes, he was carrying a brass sundial with a green ribbon around it.
Mr. Green. I was Mr. Green. Me, George Stroud. And Janet was out to find the guy who was playing around with this girl. And when he found him, he'd wreck his life. There was only one person who could cover up my trail. Pauline York. There wasn't any answer. I tried the door. It was open. Pauline was there. At first, I thought she was wearing a red bathing cap. But she wasn't. Something had happened to her head. And she was dead. I was shocked, but I wasn't scared. I wasn't scared until I glanced at her clock, which had fallen to the floor. It was smashed. Stopped at 12:15. 15 minutes before I'd left her apartment. I did some more looking around. Three things were missing. The sundial, the check that had been in her purse, and my handkerchief. I tried to think. I could only think of one thing. Janet. He was afraid. He was afraid because he'd murdered Pauline York and because he knew someone had seen him enter her apartment. Pauline must have told him the man's name was Green. Her last joke. Now, Janet was tracking him down. And when he found him, he'd pin a murder on me. Time. I needed time to think. I had to stall Janet, stall him long enough to prove that he'd killed Pauline. And the only way I could do that was by working at his side, by helping to frame myself for the murder of Pauline York. The big clock said 10:30 a.m. when I reached the Janet building. Janet was revolting against his master, Time. He'd made Time stop for Pauline York. If he could, he'd make it stop for his only witness, for Mr. Green, me, George Stroud. And I needed time, time to think. But Janet wouldn't give it to me. He told me to start the search immediately, and I had to do it. Time, the big clock spitting out the seconds. Time, the wheels turning, the wheels that locate missing men. Time, if I only had time to make Janet crack, but how? And then the information started coming in.
We're on our way, George, on our way. The man Barth Hatchett girl remembers a guy in a gorgeous blonde, and that guy fits our description of Green. The bartender won't be in for another hour.
Time. I needed time. Where was Pauline's check?
Mr. Stroud, a witness saw a man answering Green's description about 10:30 last night with a blonde 4 blocks from the Van Barth. The man was carrying a brass sundial tied with a green ribbon.
Time. It was moving faster. The sundial. Where was the sundial?
The bartender remembers the guy, George. Says the drink was spilled on the girl. She used Green's handkerchief to soak it up.
Time. If I had to find my handkerchief.
They've traced the sundial to a secondhand dealer on 3rd Avenue, a man named Cole.
Time. Time. It was running out.
The secondhand dealer's on his way over, George.
Time. Time. Time.
Well, George, when do you think we'll have him?
It's only a matter of time, Mr. Janet. Only a matter of time. Only a matter of time. And every second made Janet safer, covering his trail and cutting off my retreat. Now they knew almost every move Green had made. Green and the blonde. They were linked together tight, like the lid of a coffin.
Mr. Cole is here, George.
Who?
The second-hand dealer.
Oh, where is he?
Reception room B, 3rd floor.
Alone?
Yeah. I knew you'd want to talk to him.
Thanks. Don't make a sound, Mr. Cole.
You're the man they're looking for. You don't frighten me. I don't know what you've done, but you don't...
Dragged him into a broom closet. He'd get out soon. Just a matter of time. Now think fast, George. Think fast. Now is the time to hit, and hit hard. But how? I went to Janet's office.
Where is this man, George? Where is he?
I don't know, Janet. But a powder room attendant at the Van Barth has identified the girl.
And? Her name?
It's Pauline York, Steve.
Did you talk with her, George?
No, I couldn't. She's dead.
I see.
You don't seem surprised.
George, why do you think we've been conducting this search? We know about her death. We haven't informed the police because we feel we can be of public service and at the same time secure an excellent story for Crimeways.
How'd you find out about it?
Her maid. Her maid found her.
My apologies. My maid's on vacation. We'll be alone.
Her maid?
Yes. She phoned Steve here.
Why Steve?
Miss York was a... protégé of his. Wasn't she, Steve?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
I see. Then Green didn't necessarily kill her.
Why, it could have been Steve here.
Well, that's absurd. I phoned him at his home last night about 12:30.
Within a few minutes of the murder.
How do you know, Steve?
A clock broke in the struggle.
Oh. Then you've been in her apartment.
Of course not. The maid reported it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the maid.
Yes.
So Steve was in on it. He'd been in her apartment. He was protecting Janet. Time. I needed time, and the big clock was turning. I went back to my office.
Mr. Stroud, your wife was here. I sent her to Steve Hagen's office. He isn't using it, and we're off the visit here.
And that's the story, darling. Every bit of it.
But, George, why haven't you called the police?
And face a murder charge? Janet will have all kinds of alibis.
George, Janeth must have taken a cab when he left her place. Have you checked the cab drivers?
Cab drivers?
Mm-hmm.
Georgette, you're wonderful. Janeth might have slipped up just this once. Oh, Donald, I'm out of cigarettes. Do you have any?
Right here.
Oh, never mind. I'll take another Steve's box. George, Janeth must have taken the cab. He...
George, what's wrong?
There, in the cigarette box.
It's a handkerchief.
My handkerchief, the one that was in Pauline York's purse.
George, oh, here you are.
Hello, Steve.
The second-hand dealer says he was assaulted by Green right here in the building. We have him trapped at the exits. The second-hand dealer, the bartender, the hat check girl are scrutinizing everyone.
Well, I guess we've got him.
And George, Janeth has ordered the guards to shoot to kill.
Darling, listen closely.
Yes, George.
You'll have to check the cab stands. Find out if a driver picked up Janeth after 12:30 last night.
Where will you be?
In the clock tower, in Janeth's big clock.
All right.
Time. Passing the seconds around me. Time to live and time to die. And only the sound of the electric generator that makes the clock go round. Nice blue sparks. Power. Power enough to kill. And the seconds go by. Time. The sundial. Where was the sundial? Time. The sundial. The clock. The clock. Here. That's it.
George.
Here. The fool, Georgette. That clock-crazy fool hid the sundial here in the big clock.
Oh, you found it.
There's bloodstains on it. This sundial killed Pauline York.
Oh, George.
Look out. Get away from that generator. It's dangerous.
All right. I checked the fare records of the taxicab company. Janeth was driven to 612 Sutton Place.
Steve. That's Steve's address. Georgette, it fits. When Janeth asked Pauline about the man she'd been with, she taunted him into an egotistical rage. Mm-hmm. He killed her and then ran to Steve. Steve came back to the apartment, set back the clock, tore up the check, and took the handkerchief and the sundial. Mm. And Janeth was just crazy enough to take the sundial from Steve and hide it here.
Oh, but they're hunting you, George, to kill you.
Georgette, yeah. Find Steve and Janeth and bring them here, and hurry.
All right.
See here, George, what are you doing in the clock?
Mr. Janeth, Steve, our search is over. We have our murderer.
You've found him? Where?
Right here, Mr. Janeth. Steve Hagen.
Me? Why, that's preposterous.
Is it, Steve? No, you're not Mr. Green, but you did murder Pauline York. Your motive was blackmail. Her bank will verify the fact that she deposited checks signed by you. The man's handkerchief she used at the Van Barth has been found in your cigarette box. The cab company has a record of driving the murderer to your address. That's it, Steve.
Yes. Steve, I'm sorry to hear this, but I want you to know, Steve, that I won't let you down. We'll fight this through for you, no matter how much it costs.
Why, you insufferable egomaniac. You think I'll continue to shield you now? George Janeth killed Pauline York. He's...
Oh! Janeth!
Stand back.
You're through, Janeth.
I'll run. I'll get away. I'll run.
The chair, he tripped.
George, the generator!
Well, he's dead. Electrocuted. Guess we better call the police. We waited for the police in the lobby, Georgette and I. And I wondered. I wondered if perhaps Janeth hadn't defeated his master. Time. The big clock had stopped. Janeth had stopped it with his body. Stopped it at midnight. The end of a day. And the beginning of a new one.
Now here again are our stars, Ray Milland and Maureen O'Sullivan, and screen director John Farrell.
Well, Maureen, how did you like renewing acquaintances with the big clock?
Oh, fine, Ray, except that my part always reminds me of a donut. I'm in there around the edges of the story, but in the middle, nothing.
Well, Maureen, John Farrell's the director of the picture. Why not complain to him?
Don't be ridiculous. She can't.
Why not?
Well, we might have an argument.
then Maureen might get angry. And if she gets angry, she might leave the studio and go home. And do you know what she'll find at home?
What?
John Farrow. I'm married to him.
So what's the use of complaining?
John, I haven't a complaint in the world. Working under your direction has been an exciting privilege and very much an education. So thanks, Johnny, and good night. And good night, Maureen. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
And good night to you, Ray Milland, Maureen O'Sullivan, and John Farrell. Next week on Screen Directors Playhouse, Pabst Blue Ribbon presents Yellow Sky, starring Gregory Peck. The Big Clock was presented through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, whose current release is The Great Gatsby, starring Alan Ladd. Screen Directors Playhouse was produced by Howard Wiley, with dramatic direction by Bill Karn. Listen again next week when Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer presents
Screen Directors Playhouse, production Yellow Sky, director William Wellman, star Gregory Peck.
Screen Directors Playhouse is brought to you by the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Newark, New Jersey, and Peoria, Illinois. James Wallington speaking.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Screen Directors Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from July 8, 1949 on NBC, bringing forth an adaptation of the 1948 motion picture, The Big Clock. And that does it for this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.